Fear patients don't want to know what the procedure is going to be. We go through the tooth, make a hole in the tooth, and take the little files down to the end of the tooth. Yeah. That, for a dental fear patient, is let's get out of there.
Welcome to The Dental Marketer. This is your go-to podcast for diving deep into the world of business, marketing, self-development, and dentistry. From startup secrets to real talk with the pros, we've got it all. So whether you're just starting out or you're deep in years in running your own practice, join us for a mix of success stories, a few learning curves, and loads of insights from the brightest in the industry. We'll chat, learn, and grow together, one episode at a time. Now, how did a dentist from a small town manage to shake things up in the world of advanced dentistry? Well, this episode takes you on an awesome ride through Dr. B.J. Moorhead's journey from humble beginnings to becoming a big name in making dental visits less scary and more patient-friendly. We're going to dive into how B.J. grew his solo practice while also teaching other dentists about IV sedation, all with the big focus on making patients feel comfortable and building their trust. We'll get into how Dr. Moorhead is a pro at helping patients who are really scared of the dentist, emphasizing the importance of chatting with them openly and letting them make their own choices about their treatment. And we're also going to take a peek at his smart marketing moves, breaking down how he rocks Google Ads and why focusing on benefits, not just the technical stuff, makes his ads so effective. And BJ shares his top 3 game-changing tools and some solid advice for dentists hitting rough patches. What you'll learn in this episode is, number one, the importance of implementation of open-ended patient dialogue, crafting marketing strategies that prioritize benefits over technicalities, 3, BJ's unique path towards success in advanced dentistry, 4, innovative tools and methodologies applied in Dr. Moorhead's practices, 5, engaging with fear-based patients and strategies to inspire their trust, and 6, wisdom for overcoming hardships in your journey. So I'm excited for you to listen to this episode, and without further delay, here is Dr. B.J. Moorhead. In the realm of dental care, where precision and expertise are paramount, the technology supporting your practice can either propel you to excellence or pull you into a quagmire of complications. Dark Horse Tech stands at the forefront, offering state-of-the-art dental technology solutions that meld with the heartbeat of your operations. Visualize a day at your clinic where digital x-rays are processed in a blink, patient records are accessed with a single click, and where your entire management system responds as quickly as your team does. Dark Horse Tech makes this a reality. And for a limited time, they're making it easier than ever to upgrade your practice. Dark Horse Tech is offering you 1 month of service absolutely free. Click the first link in the show notes below to check out the exclusive deal Dark Horse Tech has for you. BJ, how's it going, bud?
Doing well. How about yourself, Michael?
Doing pretty good. If you don't mind me asking, where are you located?
I'm in Kentucky. I'm not in the middle of nowhere, but in this rural town an hour northeast of Lexington, I can see it from here.
Okay, wow. Wow. It's in a nice area. That's a good area. So then, if you don't mind me asking, tell us a little bit about your past, your present. How'd you get to where you are today?
I started a scratch practice in the early 80s, which you can't do anymore with as a new dentist, in a small rural town. I played it safe and stayed in a small town where I'd grown up. I'm a solo practitioner. I did the average kind of stuff for about 20 years. Went to Walter Haley's dental boot camp and learned verbal skills. And that was number one that changed my life. He also challenged me to up the game on continuing education. And I became a continuing education junkie. I learned some advanced skills. I started doing oral sedation through the DOCS program in 2000, 2001. Back in 2009, I was on track to become a president starting in 2012 for the Kentucky Dental Association. And I had some friends. I went to Louisville to dental school. I had some friends at Kentucky in Lexington. And Dr. Ted Raybould had told me a few years before when we had a conversation, if I ever saw the need for an IV sedation program, talk to him, he would consider creating it. And he and a Dr. Bob Henry did. And they ran that program for probably 7, 8 years. And then there was a kind of a hole in Kentucky. And myself and a business partner, Dr. Darren Greenwell, formed a company called IV Sedation Training for Dentists back 2.5 years ago. And we've been teaching IV sedation full throttle since.
So are you still in your solo practice or no?
I am, yes. Okay. 42 years.
Wow.
Do the math, that makes me 37.
Got it. Perfect math. So then the IV sedation program, that came about just 2 years ago. Now, are you still practicing the same amount
in your practice? Yes, I practice 4 days a week. The IV sedation program, we teach on the weekends. American Dental Association guidelines dictate that the programs have to be 60 hours of didactic and 20 patient experiences. We teach about probably 36 to 40 hours online live. So we've got direct interaction with the students, and then we bring them to teach them venipuncture, ACLS, and then do the clinical experiences.
Gotcha. Okay, that's interesting. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but let's rewind a little bit.
Okay.
You mentioned you learned verbal skills, and that changed your life.
Yes.
So what specifically did you start doing, utilizing, and that's different that changed your life?
There is a lecturer still around by the name of Roger Levin, and I remember following him in the late 80s, early 90s, and he could handle a conversation like I've learned to now, to be able to be completely fluent, to talk to other dentists, to talk to patients, to motivate people. I remember in his lecture raising my hand and said, well, if you've got these verbal skills, why don't you write a book on it? He did. I got out the book. I happened upon it about 5 years ago, and it seemed so elementary. But what we set ourselves out to learn, if you push yourself, you grow.
It's true. Yeah.
So it's talking to patients, motivating them, making them feel comfortable. And where I target in marketing fear patients, not just IV sedation, but where I target that, I've got to be able to help them let their wall down where they feel comfortable and where I can feel trusted and they'll be straight with me and I can help them.
Interesting. So then let's talk about that a little bit more. Let's talk about how you talk to them, market to fear, right? Patients who have this type of fear of going to the dentist.
Yes, sir.
How do you do that? Like, what are the first steps to, I guess, approach that situation?
I've got to get them in the door first. Mm-hmm. So we have to have marketing to get them in the door. We have to have verbal skills that I teach my team. I own a software company called StreamDent that's checklist for running a dental office. So mm-hmm. I give them templates. I don't want them sounding like, do you want fries with that? But I mm-hmm. want to give them a framework where they've got the information to be able to talk to that patient on the phone and know that they're safe to come in. I heard back a good 20 years ago, research that said the average fear patient, high fear patient, can take a 45-minute call to get them comfortable enough to schedule an appointment. So you've got to have capacity at the front desk where the patient, the potential patient, doesn't feel rushed. And then once you get them in the door, you've got to ask open-ended questions to find out where they are now and where they want to go. I have my team ask those open-ended questions. I have them take some photos so that the patient can discover things for themselves so they don't feel sold to. Before I come in the room, they position my dental stool where it's going to be at eye level with the patient. Yeah. I come in, sit down, shake hands or fist bump. They introduce me. And as we're talking in a little bit, one of the first things I say to a patient before they're ever leaned back is this script. And I tell them, because their spouse may come in too, I try to tell every new patient this. You already know it's any doctor's job to diagnose and make recommendations. But it should never be our job to make decisions for you. And I won't do that. I'm here to guide you. And you see the wall come down. Some of them will actually thank you for saying that. And those words might work in another dentist's mouth. It may be something else. But finding something to where you can quickly earn trust makes a world of difference. Mm-hmm. So the market, and you already know because you do a dental marketing podcast, the dental marketing starts in getting the patient in. But it's all the way through in getting case acceptance and getting them to follow through. Every part of it is dental marketing.
That's super interesting. So how did you come up with that, I guess, question when it came through the trial and error of this process?
I worked through some things and just finally found something that fit. I've only used that for a couple of years.
Okay, nice, nice. So then what open-ended questions does your team utilize over the phone that can kind of like, you know how some people are like, I just want to know if you take my insurance, or I just want to know how much this is. Just tell me the price. What open-ended questions could we utilize?
How did you hear about our office? And if they hear it was from a fearful patient, that might key them in. What, asking about a chief complaint to know what, and then asking how long it's been since they've been to the dentist. I want to give you a statistic, Michael. 80% of patients don't like to come to the dentist, and a little over 20% have put it off so long that it is do or die just when they absolutely have to do it or get made to do it. And that huge market of 1 out of 5 patients has so much unmet need that it could keep all of us busy if we all shared them for decades.
So then having more of that abundance mindset then, right?
Yes.
Where
you can look at competition in dentistry, but there's always enough to go around. Make yourself the person that the patient trusts and wants to take care of them.
So if you don't mind me asking, BJ, then how long are your new patient appointments?
Longer than most. I don't do things corporate style. I had a dental consultant in a few years ago and wanted us to get patients in and out in an hour because the patient would get bored. And I'll admit there is an angle to that that's right. But if I want to have time to develop a relationship, we have them fill forms out. Most of them do them digitally. We use Weave. Mm-hmm. Then my team has already downloaded the health history and the dental history before they come in. They've put some things in the clinical notes so that they can ask the patient to be able to get things going quickly. Patient's scheduled for 90 minutes. The dental assistant is usually with them probably 50 minutes. Medical history, dental history, open questions. And those are chief complaint, motivating factors, and obstacles. We ask some others, but that's the big three. Chief complaint, motivating factors, and obstacles. If you've ever studied personality types, we ask them a couple of questions to make a guess at what DISC score they are. And I especially want to know if they are someone that is assertive, that likes to make decisions quickly, or they're more passive and they need to think about things, because the patients that are very direct want to make those fast decisions. If you make them come back for a consult, it denies them what they want to get going. The flip side, I think something like 70% of the population is that non-assertive type. If you push them, they're out the door. In the front door, out the back door.
Okay. So then what questions does your assistant ask in order to evaluate, okay, are they going to be assertive and they're going to judge right now? And then I'm assuming like their script has to change pretty quick, right? The assistant's script would be like, okay, let's get this done right now, compared to the one who wants to wait.
To some degree, but we're talking about case presentation and asking for acceptance. That's where the direct and the indirect comes in. Because if you push the patient at the stage where you've talked about options and they need to think about it, you want to have them back to ask a commitment for a first appointment, get them back in and do a consultation on those non-assertive folks. And the questions, are you a people person or a task-oriented person? And then the most important one for assertive and non-assertive, would you prefer Dr. Moorhead to give you the details up front, or do you like more the big picture?
And if they say big picture?
Big picture are direct. They want to make a decision. Details, they want to think about it.
Interesting. I never thought about that. So then when it comes
that
down
stuff,
to
that, by the way, goes all the way back to Socrates.
Yeah, really?
There's a lot of personality type surveys, but they all work on that same principle.
I'm not sure. Okay, so that's interesting. And then when do you, I guess, guide them or tell them about the price? Is that up front, at the middle, or when?
We try to get insurance information ahead of time so we can know where we stand there, because I'm in rural Kentucky. Kentucky is not a rich state. I've got lower per capita incomes. I've got to be able to work with insurance and make it fit the patient's budget. Sometimes the healthcare credit card kinds of financing work. Sometimes they can't even qualify. I learned a spear technique back in 2012 that has really served me well. Spear recommended, I dictate what I see and diagnose and treatment plan tooth by tooth. I have a 1 to 32. The only paper we use in the office is a data collection thing, and they input it and shred the piece of paper. But for each tooth, it's a problem, a diagnosis, and a priority. And Spear recommended breaking everything into at least 3 categories. Immediate needs. He said, 12 to 24 months, I say 6 to 24 months, about things that would be the next phase. And then ideal dentistry. The ideal things are things that the patient may never get to. Porcelain veneers, full mouth equilibration, orthodontics. But if you treatment plan it and you have it in a folder in the chart, and 2 years later the patient comes in for recare, doctor, you don't have time to look at the comprehensive exam that happened 2 years ago and read through the notes. But if it's treatment planned as a possibility, you know to bring it up. Had you ever considered, a couple of years ago, you remember we talked about such and such. Have you ever given that any more thought?
And then that's when it kind of comes back up, right, for them.
Yeah.
Invisalign or anything like that. But the priority is the stuff that they came, the chief complaint, like you said, right?
And for the fear patients that I'm talking about marketing to, they have more things that you got to address immediately. You got to get them out of pain. You got to get the caries infection under control. You got to get the perio. There's another interesting question I ask many of those fear patients. I ask them, and I say, I know you can't give me an immediate answer. You've got to find out if you can trust me first. But before I develop your whole treatment plan, I'm going to be asking you, is it likely that you're just trying to get done what has to be done to get you past this emergency or urgency? Or would you like to achieve what you said in your goal, that you'd like to keep your teeth and have that nice smile? If you want that, would you come back regularly? I want to give you a predictable plan. I don't want to waste your money. I want you to be able to enjoy what I do for you for years to come, if you're ready for it. Does that make sense? That's what I would say.
And typically, when you say that, what's the response? Is it like 50-50, or how does that look?
I've learned not to be able to predict it. Go with the flow. Some patients can give me an answer then. Some patients I'll ask two appointments later after they've had a little bit of work, and that might be an IV appointment. That might be NuCalm, and I gave you a video to show your audience on using nitrous and NuCalm, and I'll talk to you about that in a little bit, but there's little tools that you can use to make the patient feel comfortable.
Interesting. Okay. And I noticed you said right now, when you're talking to the patient before designing the treatment plan, right, your goal, you mentioned your goal. So in the new patient forms or anything like that?
The patient's goal.
Yeah.
And we don't do that in written form. We do a patient interview because we want to hear what they say, and we want to write down their exact words.
Oh, how does that work?
If you can write down the exact words in quotes and be able to use that back. It says here you told Caitlin what you've always wanted is that dynamite smile, and you're ashamed of that missing tooth. And we take photos, and it's not intraoral photos. It's digital photos. Smile, retracted, open, side, and upper and lower occlusals. I like that technique because the patients can identify with what they see on the photo instead of, years ago when we came up with panoramic x-rays, you use panoramic x-rays to show the patient what's going on instead of the intraorals because they can tell where in the heck it is in their mouth. It's the same thing if you've got an occlusal photo and a buccal photo that shows a particular tooth, they can wrap their head around that and know what you're talking about.
Okay.
And so then we put up those photos, and if they're cosmetic oriented, I want that dynamite smile. What would you change about this? Anything else, until we stop and write everything down.
So this is, new patient interview, that is done
New patient interview is, we don't ask those open-ended questions on a form. We ask them when they get there live. The dental assistant asks those things.
That's what the 50 minutes.
Yes. It's getting a relationship with the patient. And again, I market to fear patients. I've done it for 23, 24 years now. Most of our advertising is Google. We do a little bit of other stuff, but it's mostly Google and then asking for patient referrals.
Okay. Budget-wise, how much are you normally utilizing for that?
I think we're spending about $1,000 a month on Google.
Okay. And so from what you've seen, what are some mistakes that people are making and that you've made at the beginning when marketing to fear-based patients?
The biggest is talking about technical details instead of talking about benefits, about how you can help them. They do not want to know about that. Fear patients don't want to know what the procedure is going to be. They want to know what the result's going to be. So that is the number one mistake I've made, and I see others still making a lot.
So like the features of the procedure.
What they're going to accomplish after they're finished with treatment.
So the mistake you've seen is like the features, like talking about like, this is how the procedure is going to look, blah, 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 that.
Yeah. We go through the tooth, make a hole in the tooth, and take the little files down to the end of the tooth. Yeah. That, for a dental fear patient, is let's get out of there.
Okay. But in the benefits is, how would you word that then? Just to say, like, you're going to be out of pain.
You're going to be out of pain. You're going to still be able to have that tooth to be able to chew. You're going to be comfortable.
Interesting. Okay. And so this is the stuff you utilize in your marketing message.
Yes.
Okay. So with that being said, I know you mentioned you were going to bring it up a little bit further when it came to numbing or the IV sedation with fear-based patients.
Numbing, I do something that costs me as a solo practitioner about $700 or $800 a month. I use onset buffering. My patients don't feel sting. Confession, I am not just dental, anything in healthcare. I am a fearful patient. When I was in middle school, I passed out one time from having my blood pressure taken. Okay?
Yeah.
So when I get an injection, I get anxious, tense. I had to have a crown replaced last fall. I drove to a friend that I knew would do quality work. He doesn't buffer his anesthetic. I took my onset pen and I buffered the cartridges and handed it to them. Onset says that 40% of patients don't feel the injection. I had a PSA injection. I did not feel the injection. My patients leave the office telling my team that was the easiest injection I ever received. I didn't feel it. I barely felt it. So for the patients that are borderline that don't need some sort of sedation, that's a biggie. Buffering also has another big benefit. If you don't want to have to sit down, numb up the patient, and leave for 10 minutes or forget and make it 15, if you want to be more productive, buffering can let an infiltration work in 30 seconds and a mandibular block in 2 minutes. Well, what if you miss the block? Then you wait 2 minutes and fix it instead of waiting 7 to 15 minutes. So I go by Dr. Checklist on the lecture circuit. I own streamed in software that are checklists for running a dental office. And I rearranged my checklist, my protocols, to where my dental assistants do everything that needs to be done before I get in. If we're scanning, they scan the patient before and have a shade. If there's an impression to take, they've gotten that ahead of time. They've gone over the consent forms ahead of time. When I sit down, we're good to go. So that's biggie number one tool. Number two, for the patients that are not quite as anxious, or they're on the fence, or they need IV sedation, but they've got one tooth. They've had IV sedation before. They've learned to trust me, and they've got an occlusal filling to do. Something simple. There is a tool called Nucalm, N-U-C-A-L-M, and I mentioned that on the video that I sent you. Nucalm is not a product for dentistry. It's even used by the U.S. military. It is noise-canceling headphones and the rescue mode of Nucalm is what's useful for dentistry, N-U-C-A-L-M again, Nucalm.com. The rescue mode, you can put on a tablet on your phone, hook them to the Bluetooth headphones or bone-conducting headphones. I like Bluetooth because it also blocks out the drill. The patients don't like drills. You know that already. And I'm calling it what I tell them. They call it a drill. I'll call it a drill. They don't know what a handpiece is. Too many offices don't have nitrous oxide, but nitrous oxide works some for patients, but it's not quite enough. If you add Nucalm, it gets into the range where you're getting close to the equivalent of how a patient would be relaxed if they're sedated. And they can still drive themselves home. They don't have to have an escort. And Nucalm, I think, would cost an office about $55, $60 a month. The headphones, and then there's a little disc that you put on the left inside wrist. That's how it works. But it's worth checking out. And then the last tool I have, and I told you I teach it, is IV sedation. I did oral for 8-9 years. Not terribly predictable. The regulations since 2016 have seen that it needs the same education as IV sedation. So if you're going to learn IV sedation, why not have the benefits? I premedicate most of those patients with something like Trizalam, a short-acting cousin to Valium. They come in a little drunk. They don't care that I'm starting an IV. Sometimes they don't remember coming in. They sleep through the appointment, and I'm their hero. And the average dental patient needs, for somebody that 20% that has put off work for years, they need about $1,500 to $2,000 worth of work for every year they put off doing their dentistry. So it's a huge market.
Wow. Okay. So those are the three. If we rewind a little bit, and I know you go by Dr. Checklist, right? You said.
Oh, it's lecture circuit. Yes.
When it comes to the frameworks of that, the checklist, I guess, can you let us know what are some of the major specific things the team should be doing before you enter the room?
For clinical procedure, for exam, what?
Let's do for the new patient exam.
For the new patient exam, they have gone over a medical history. In my software, the polypharmacy is getting to where sometimes if you don't have the right systems in place, the doctor can get trapped there for 7 to 10 minutes of wasted time that you could have delegated going through what this problem is, what they take, how stable it is. I put all of that information into my software. So when my dental assistants do a medical history and they see that the patient has diabetes, they ask the questions that would normally be in the doctor's head. Same thing for anything that's on the medical history that they answer yes to, the patient answers yes to, they've done a follow-up for me. So I have to spend a minute, minute and a half on the medical history asking a few questions. So they've done the medical history. They've done the dental history, the open-ended questions we talked about earlier. They took photos before that so that the camera card can go up front and be cropped and ready so that when they do the last part of the dental history, they can show the patient the photo of the smile, retracted smile. What would you change? If they're not cosmetic oriented, they're not going to get a lot out of that. But their patients sometimes are, sometimes aren't. They've gotten the radiographs. For a clinical procedure, I don't want with the checklist approach, and this uses the approach that aviators do when they fly a plane. And ask yourself, if you got on a plane and you found out that the pilot and the co-pilot were not going to run a safety checklist, do you want to stay on the plane? But that's why they run our dental offices all the time. And before I did the checklist approach, I would regularly have to stop 3 or 4 times during a procedure for them to run to sterilization and grab something. That doesn't happen anymore. I don't want to slow down an experienced person. So an experienced person, I ask to set up for the procedure, then take the short 20 seconds it takes to bring up the checklist on the tablet or on the operatory computer and make sure everything's there. And I don't ask them to check mark everything. Don't want to slow them down. The flip side, I can take someone with no dental experience, business office or clinical, and onboard them, and I can have them at the competent stage using checklists in a month to month and a half instead of the industry standard of 4 to 6 months. And for those dental assistants, I want them checking everything until we see that they have gotten the competent stage. They've got access to a link to where they can see the photos of everything they're supposed to bring in the room, photos of the cassettes to where they can learn the instruments easily. They learn quickly. And in my area in rural Kentucky, I don't get experienced people. I get people that worked at Applebee's or a factory. But I also found out that since pandemic, when dental healthcare workers are in a shortage, more doctors are telling me that when they hire someone that they train themselves and get to train them their way, it works out better anyway.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. So then I was going to ask you that. So this is StreamDent basically, right? Yeah. All this can be found on StreamDent. And so on there, it's a checklist. It's a system. Basically, we're looking at a system here and then you click it and then it shows, does it show like videos on how it's supposed to look like or what it's supposed to look like or just pictures or?
You can do it either way. You can upload your videos to YouTube or Vimeo and put a link in, or you can upload the photos directly.
Interesting. Okay. So
I did an endo procedure yesterday and a dental assistant has been working for me for 45 days. And for a GP office to set up an operatory for endo is complicated. We have everything on the list and we've got photos of how it should be laid out on the doctor's side and on the assistant side. I had to change 3 things because we weren't going to do a post and it didn't need it to change.
Wow. So it's quick. It's fast. Yeah. Your team right now, if you don't mind me asking, how big is your team?
Counting myself, there are 9 of us.
So all 9, did they have dental background experience or anything like that or no?
My dental hygienist did. And one of the assistants went to a dental assisting school but had never worked in a dental office and then did her externship in our office where we trained them. So pretty much the dental hygienist and myself.
Wow. And everybody else on your team learned because of your checklist, StreamDent.
Yes.
Okay. And then so with that being said, throughout this process, I know you mentioned, and you've been up and running your practice for a really, really long time, right? Throughout the process, some of the companies that you've worked with, what's been some of the best companies and then some of the ones that just didn't work with you or didn't vibe with you?
I try not to think negative. The first 20 years, I was the negative Nelly. I've worked hard to get away from that. I tend to focus on things that do work for me. I've used Intrix software since 2001. I think it still has 40% of the market. I bought it before Shine even owned it. But they've developed the program so well. I'm glad they opened the framework where they let third-party add-ons. For instance, I mentioned that we use Weave. We use VoIP calls. Yeah. We use their app for being able to access the phone after hours. We use their digital forms, et cetera. That's been very useful. I use DEXA software because it's PC-based. Most of the dental programs are PC-based, but DEXA works like a Mac program. I liked that. I mentioned Onset that has helped us tremendously. That's the biggies.
Those are the biggies. Those are the good ones right there, yeah. For your marketing. Wonderful. It's wonderful.
Marketing, I use some small firms that probably wouldn't be recognized. For the IV sedation training, we use Grace Rizza out of Chicago. I use a smaller one to do the Google ads for us. I have a virtual employee in the Philippines that sets up Facebook ads for us. And she was the one that contacted you to market me for the podcast.
Gotcha. Okay, awesome. I like that. I like that a lot. Now, then throughout this process, I guess let's talk about from the moment you decided to open your practice to right now, what's been some of the biggest struggles that you've encountered?
Negativity from dental school, the mindset of got to find something wrong instead of something right. And I made employees miserable for decades. It took so long for me to get past that. That was the biggest struggle. I had to change from a perfectionist mindset to an excellence mindset. That was liberating.
Excellence mindset, what does that look like?
That looks like always giving your best, but realizing that you can't control everything. So for instance, for the dental fear patient, that you've got to restore something to get them out of pain, and you can't control the bleeding, and you're going to wind up with a void that they're going to have to come back with, instead of spending another 45 minutes trying to close the margin when you can't anyway. You tell the patient ahead of time what you're likely going to be accomplishing and what probably can't be because of the situation.
And BJ, you've been okay with talking to a patient, letting them know everything, and then them just saying, okay, I'll see, and then never seeing them again?
It happens sometimes with fear patients. It does.
You've been okay with that, right?
Yes, have to be. If I'm going to help them at all, I've got to give them a start. And some of those patients wind up coming back 3-5 years later and then doing their work because they didn't feel pushed.
And that's the thing.
And so they weren't ready. They weren't ready financially. They weren't ready mentally, whatever.
Yeah. You're not there trying to like sell, trying to push or anything like that. Not trying to say, this is the urgency you need unless it's necessary.
If you develop the relationship first with a mindset of doing things over time, then you can still accomplish the same thing. The bottom line will still be the same. And you've got a chance to keep that patient for life instead of using them up to try to get quotas. And this happens in some corporate offices. There are some corporate offices that do great. There are some corporate offices that are nothing but a treadmill. And we all know what offices those are. I'm blessed to be able to have the solo practice and never have the treadmill.
That's interesting. That's so good. And so with the biggest struggles, what's some of the best advice that you can give some of us who are doing either a startup or an acquisition and we're open or about to open?
Challenge yourself with your education. Learn the advanced skills so that you can have your whole career to be able to enjoy them. Learn the implantology. Learn the IV sedation. Learn how to do the tough crown and bridge cases. Find mentors. I have learned so much by going into asking a doctor if I can come in and watch him or her. I always learn something, no matter what the skill of the doctor. I either learned something not to do or I learned something to do. And back 10 to 20 years ago, I traveled from Kentucky to Massachusetts to Maine to Oregon. The mentors are flattered that you want to spend time with them. The only time I ever had a no was that the office had so many that they had mentored that they were just saturated and they referred me to somebody else who had the same thing, and they referred me to somebody else, and I wound up going to Pennsylvania. But I learned the same things. Hand-me-down skills.
Yeah, yeah. So just ask. Ask if they can be a mentee. Right. Okay, interesting. BJ, thank you so much for being with us. It's been a pleasure. But before we say goodbye, can you tell our listeners where they can find you?
You can find me on StreamDent, streamdent.com. All of these websites have a contact form that you can get at me. My speaker website is Dr. Morehead, and you can see the spelling down at the bottom there, but it's drmoorhead.com. My IV sedation program that I co-teach with Darren Greenwell is ivsedationtrainingfordentists.com. It's already been approved in just the 3 years in 12 or 13 states, and we're growing. And if you know SEO, we picked the name out so it would do its own SEO, IV Sedation Training for Dentists. My email is dr.m@streamdent.com, streamdent.com. And I have a Google voice number that rings my office and my cell. So I'm available pretty much anytime, 502-509-1570. Michael, I really appreciate this tonight. It's been fun.
No, yeah, it's been fun. And real quick, before we sign off, can you break down to us StreamDent? The benefits, what does it do? What are we looking at?
StreamDent, when you see the price online, you will say, how can he do it for that? And my goal is to get it out there to more offices. So it's extremely affordable. But it is for everything that we do in dentistry, business office, clinical. It has hundreds of checklists for how to do the procedure. And at first, it looks off-putting because I could never customize all that. In an average GP practice, if you customize 10 or 15 checklists, you cover 90% of what they do every day. And so I teach my doctors to pick your pain points on what is the most problem in your office now and customize that and work gradually toward. But I've got all kinds of little things that are time-saving, like the medical history questions to be able to delegate that to the dental assistant, the new patient processes. I just put together something recently on how to be able to ethically offer to upsell certain procedures. I do an advanced technique on dentures called the branching technique I learned from Jack Turbeville. And what I charge for dentures is more what I pay from a lab bill, is more than what most patients pay for dentures. I can't do it for the PPO rate. And I am on with a lot of PPOs. I only sign contracts with PPOs that will allow me to offer the patient an option. And I created digital forms for my clients as well to where they can download those things, learn the verbal skills. I've got a video on what you need to do to put in the right fake ADA codes to be able to make the process work. All kinds of little, small things to make a practice grow.
So that's all there. Tons of tiny and large systems.
Yes.
Checklist in StreamDent. Interesting. Okay, so that's going to be in the show notes below. So if anyone wants to check it out, definitely look for BJ's name and then go in the show notes below and click on all his links. But BJ, thank you so much for being with us. It's been a pleasure, and we'll hear from you soon.
Thanks again, Michael. Bye.
And that's going to do it for this episode. But don't forget, the sponsor for this episode is Dark Horse Tech, and they're offering you 1 month of service for free. So go in the show notes below, click on the first link in the show notes below. And especially if you're struggling with IT headaches, or maybe you're looking to transition to another IT company, give Ruben and his team a call. Give Dark Horse Tech a call and check them out. You can also see what all your colleagues are saying about Dark Horse Tech in that link in the show notes below. So go ahead and check that out. Get your first month for free. And I'm sure they're excited to work with you. At the same time, if you want to reach out to BJ Morehead, go in the show notes below, look for his name, and check out the links that he has there for you. And thank you so much for tuning into this episode, and I'll talk to you in the next episode.